chance? Okay, let's go ahead then. Next, I'd like to introduce David Gillette and Michael Huangs. David will be up speaking for about 10 minutes about the program at Cal Poly. And while he's getting ready, this is of particular interest to me because instead of talking about sort of the outcomes, he's going to be talking about the process. And as we know in engineering, the process is all important if you're looking for particular outcomes.
Okay, let me get it up here. So I run the Liberal Arts and Engineering Studies program with Michael Huangs, and we've been running now for about 7 years, and we threw these slides together last night to try to figure out some ways to visualize what's here, because one of the things that's important to know about our program and came up this morning is we tried something new at a very conservative institution that's not comfortable with that. And so we ended up documenting that last year in an article in engineering studies, which went through probably the best editorial process I've ever been through as a writer with anything. It was incredible. It was the closest reading and best process we've ever been through on anything. And what we wrote about there was sort of the Shakespearean levels of angst and anxiety that were involved with trying something new at an institution where engineers were really dead set to not have anything to do with the arts, and the arts really didn't want anything to do with the engineers. So I thought we'd start with one of our student works here, which is very appropriate, a kind of freaked out skeleton, to talk about really what happened in the context of what we did. So Cal Poly, for those of you who don't know, is part of the California State University system. We've been around for a while. It's about 18,000 undergraduates, about 1,000 graduate students, 30% acceptance rate, fairly well-known architecture program, a fairly well-known undergraduate engineering program. The theme for Cal Poly, or the mantra that we keep coming back to, is that it's learned by doing. And we keep investigating that all the time about what that actually means. We have a lot of different programs from both of those colleges. We have a very robust, large college of liberal arts. In fact, I think the liberal arts is the largest college at Cal Poly in terms of students. And we have a very well-known and large engineering and sciences program as well at Cal Poly. So when we put together the program, the reason LES came into existence was basically out of desperation. We had a large number of people that were leaving engineering and were very unhappy when they were leaving engineering. Cal Poly has this aspect that the students declare when they what major they want to take at Cal Poly before they come in to Cal Poly. So they enter with a major in mind, which is problematical considering that a lot of those kids probably made that decision when they were 16 based on some high school counselor giving them guidance, and they say, I want to work at Disney and design rides for Disney, and they say, oh, you have to take engineering. So those students get about 2 or 3 years in engineering at Cal Poly and realize that's not really what they want to do, or what they're seeing from engineering or what they were seeing in engineering wasn't taking them toward where they wanted to go. And so the university tried to figure out how we could solve this. And so what we thought is maybe we can put together liberal arts, engineering, and put these two things together. The first attempt at doing that was a complete and utter disaster that resulted in a good 2 or 3 years that followed of horrible commentary about these epic kind of meetings where people were throwing stuff at each other and people who wouldn't talk to each other. So I guess, I don't know, no one was letting the air out of each other's tires or anything, but it was pretty dramatic. And I returned after being overseas for a little while and was asked by the Dean of Liberal Arts to fix this. And so what we did is we kind of chucked out what had happened before, kind of eliminated the players from the original tragedy, and decided to create something that was a little more along the lines of a comedy with a happy resolution to it. And so what we did is we put together people that had already done interdisciplinary work in their own fields and had interdisciplinary backgrounds, which meant that we called upon a lot of people who'd done work overseas or had done commercial work outside the university and had a different perspective on how engineering functions in the real world. And that worked really well. And then we listened to each other very carefully about how we defined our fields and how we defined our approaches to study and how we defined our approaches to education. The key thing that we found all along and that works really well at Cal Poly is that Cal Poly tends to hire people who love to teach. That's the reason you go there. I mean, you go there to do research and other things that you do at other institutions, but our primary conversation all the time at every hiring interview process that I've ever been part of at Cal Poly, it constantly goes back to teaching. So it's an institution filled with people that love being in the classroom. And so when we pitched this program as a way of helping students get what they need out of the university and to keep students from dropping out and going to other institutions, or dropping out of engineering, being very unhappy, and taking a long time to get into another major, maybe we needed a solution. And when we got everyone kind of on the same page with that, that's where we created the program. So the program is essentially half engineering, half liberal arts. Half of the undergrad, half of the classes they take are basically the same thing that all of the engineering students take for the first 2 years. Then it begins to diverge after about the first 2 years. After the first 2 years, they can begin to add in more liberal arts classes, and they can also pick and choose some of the upper-level engineering courses to finish off what they're doing. The students can create different tracks in engineering. We did that mostly initially with political partnerships that were advantageous to us. So we had friends in industrial manufacturing engineering, computer science, and electrical engineering who loved this idea, or at least weren't hurling as many things at us as the people in mechanical engineering and aeronautical engineering were. And so we went with the people who were the friendliest to us and created tracks that fit with their degrees. And so the one in computer science, for example, is, Michael, it's one class short, right, of a minor in computer science. So they're full on what you would do if you were studying that program to actually complete it as a full degree, with the exception, of course, of some of the other classes at the top. And then they add in things from the liberal arts, and being liberal and open and free, we gave them a lot more freedom in liberal arts about how they chose to put their areas together. And then the students began selecting areas of specialization. We came up with some that at the beginning we thought would be really successful. We had one on policy and management that I think all of the administrators in the program who were putting it together thought that would be brilliant, and students hated that and never took it, so we've eliminated it now. But students came up with things on their own. We had a number of students who were interested in music and sound that were in electrical engineering but were also musicians and felt that the musical part of their education and their experience as just a human being at the university was completely devalued in what they were doing in engineering or was not credited in any way. We had people who were in performance groups on campus that hid when advisors from engineering came because they were afraid that it would show they had outside interests other than engineering. So I didn't believe that anecdote when I was told the first time until I met the students that actually cowered behind others. So those students said, well, why don't we put the two together? I can take electrical engineering. I can take the classes I'm taking in secret anyway in music and put them together. And we ended up with a whole bunch of students that were interested in audio and sound design and different aspects of using sound and engineering. And so what we have a whole bunch of different kinds of students. These are actual students, the names I've made up and obscured them, but they're actual practices. So we had students put together degrees where they're putting together media arts classes in film and combining it with electrical engineering and computer science and have gone into the film and television industry. We've had students who are interested in doing community work. That's another component of what we do inside the program that I'll talk about in a second, where we send students out to do work with the community where they combine classes in political science and sociology and languages with things from industrial manufacturing and engineering where they learn about process management and system design and how they can apply that in a community setting. We've had students interested in sound. This is a student who ended up working at THX and now is actually working at a small studio where he's, I think, in charge of one of the divisions at the studio in L.A. We've had students interested in game design. We have quite a lot of them now who are interested in doing either the visual aspects of game design or sort of the structural aspects of putting the game together, but also have pulled in other parts of art and design from the visual aesthetics that they get from art and design or things that they might get in narrative from English and some other components of Cal Poly. These are representative students from actually the first couple years of the program. We ran as a trial program for the first 5 years, basically so that if anything went wrong, we could kill it easily. And that was a serious concern that at Cal Poly, because it's traditional and it's slow to make change, when it does make change, it gets locked in. And there was a very legitimate fear that if we tried this and put it in place, then and it wasn't successful, maybe it would just keep limping along at like some kind of zombie program for the next 20 years. And everyone is afraid of that. It sucks up funds, it sucks up all sorts of things, and it doesn't benefit anyone. So very early on, we said, well, let's just make it a trial run, and we'll see how we go. We'll actually prove what we can do. So the program's now graduated about 50 students. We have close to about 60 students now in the program. Okay. And so what resulted out of all of that is we ended up creating a Center for Expressive Technologies, which now takes some of the projects and programs that we've developed inside the program and spread them out across the university as a way of taking this intersection between arts and technology and spreading it out all around campus. And it's been a great fundraising method for bringing in money from especially Warner Brothers and places like that into campus. So some of the projects we did, I'll just go through really quickly, is an example of the kind of work that we've done. We were asked to put on a show of a fairly well-known California photographer whose work is in the archives at Cal Poly. And instead of just putting on a straight show, we actually took his images and put ghosts into the images so that we could tell this other story of these ghosts that were kind of hiding on campus along with some aliens. Mix that together with a real presentation of his real work. And it got us working with the students to kind of figure out the ideas about what is curation and how does that work. So it got us to reimagine the idea of a museum and the idea of factual presentation and how you can intermix that with fictional presentation. If any of you have never known about this, the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Los Angeles, you need to go. It's a performance art piece of a kind. It's a museum full of fake and real things. The person who runs it won a MacArthur Fellowship for running it. It's just a genius combination of both things that gets you to think about a museum while being in it. So we created this show. We designed interactive events for it. We created a fictional character of an archivist who was digging up this fake history of Cal Poly, hired an actor to play the role. We took over 2,000 school kids through the system from around the county to come and see and learn about this history and to get them to think about photography and accuracy and presentation of history and how all that's interacted with media. And then we had a gaming component that's very complicated and hard to explain here, but eventually we also had a mobile app that we were working for the phone to run that, which eventually evolved into the system that we call Poly Express, which is an app now for the iPhone and Android systems, which allows you to create geospatial stories that are very easy for you to code into the system as anybody. So you can walk through a neighborhood, put in tags for where you want to show people aspects of that community, put it up on the system, and a couple days later, somebody else can walk through and hear those stories. And then we paired up with an ethnographic researcher. I've got one more slide here. Dr. Grace Yeh, who was doing research on the Filipino and Japanese American communities in our area and gathering their stories. And not only do we help her gather those stories and digitize them to put up into a website for production for the community, but we also added GPS data to it so that we could actually locate all of those images. So you can now walk back through the communities that these stories took place in and hear the people who lived in those areas and lived through those histories tell you the stories, which I think became the most important part of our program in many ways, because we were actually engaging with the community and doing real work and preserving real history. The woman at the very top left-hand, or at the top image there on the left-hand side, passed away just a couple months after we did this recording process. And she was telling students and Grace and the group gathering these things, stories that no one had ever heard. And if we hadn't gathered these stories, that history would have disappeared. And so now you can actually walk through parts of the community where that woman lived and hear these stories recreated. So for students, it gives them this firsthand way of combining all of the things that they're getting from engineering and all of the things that they're getting in liberal arts and putting them together in an actual combination of arts and technology that actually makes an impact on society in a really fundamental way. And it makes it very easy for us to promote the program. It's been very successful. We keep expanding. And so now we're just trying to figure out ways to make it sustainable. And the arguments that we had at the very beginning when it first started, and I'm happy to tell you more about those, have gone away for the most part. And the reason is because everyone was scared of the thing they couldn't see. No one in engineering and no one in liberal arts could see how these two things came together. And one of the very first things we did was we actually put the programs together to create products, or we created events, or we created activities where people could actually see these two things coming together. Then it wasn't sort of an academic exercise. It was a real exercise of putting these together to create something that people could see. Once people saw the intersection between liberal arts and engineering and it was productive and useful for a wide range of students, it became a lot less threatening. And it really made the politics of getting that to run as a new thing inside a traditional institution easier to manage and easier to overcome all the obstacles that were there to begin with. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Are there any absolutely pressing questions that have to be asked now? Great. Then